Good morning and welcome in to the Monday edition of The Daily Perspective. Hi there. I'm Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. And I hope you had a great weekend and that you're looking forward to a great week. Around our place, it was business as usual, really. It was uneventful. Actually, I'm kind of happy that Monday is here because now I'm now I can get some rest. It was that kind of weekend around our house. I was busy. I stayed busy the whole time, working on various projects, working in the yard, doing all kinds of different things around the house. And now that the weekday routine is kicked back in, I don't think it's going to be as bad. I've got a handful of things that have to happen today, but it's not going to be the end of the world if those things don't happen. So, hey, I do have a couple of very important things that have to happen, and maybe those will be fodder for things tomorrow to talk about. If you're a Disney or Star Wars fan, you probably got excited at the end of last week as Disney opened their Star Wars Galaxy's Edge land at Disneyland in Anaheim, California. It's the biggest land expansion they've had in the park ever. It's big. And if you are, as I said, a Disney fan, odds are you have already seen the video. You've seen the walkthroughs and the like, and I have to confess, being a bit of a Disney fan and a Star Wars fan, I did watch some stuff that happened. It was just amazing. There's a guy who does Disney park videos and Universal theme park videos. He goes on YouTube. He goes by the name The Tim Tracker. And I follow him on social media, and I got a notice that popped up. I think it was Friday evening. I got to be honest. I'm not sure. Could have been Thursday. I don't know. Anyway, he got invited by Disney to go to California to be part of the preview opening, the day before the official opening. And he walked around with his phone streaming live to YouTube as he walked around the place and experienced it for the first time. You know, his jaw hanging, just absolutely amazed at everything. And that was it was like an hour and 10 minutes of video live from inside the park. And that was crazy to watch. It was just crazy to watch. And of course, me being the tech guy and the behind the scenes, the producer kind of guy, the whole time I'm going, focus. Okay, could you look a little left? You're busy geeking out over something and you're not showing it on the screen. Oh, there we go. And that was, and he was having technical difficulties at the beginning because he was using a device, a gimbal made for iPhone use and for other kinds of mobile phone use. And a gimbal is a handheld device that you clamp your phone in, and it makes sure that your phone stays level and pointed in the same direction all the time, regardless of what position your hand is in. And it gives you really smooth video. Well, he bought it and practiced with it for just a short period of time the day before, but didn't really put it through its paces. And so it started malfunctioning and he didn't know what to do. He finally just gave up. And I sat there shaking my head thinking, wow, this was this big and you didn't practice with your gimbal beforehand to make sure nothing would go wrong. Anyway, he had a great time. And then the next day, there's another guy who calls himself Adam the Woo on YouTube. He posted video. Was it the next day? No, it was the day after that because it's always a day behind. He was in the mob that went in for the opening of the park. And I've seen crowds before. And I've seen crowds at theme parks before, but I have never seen a crowd as dense and as thick as that crowd was for when they opened the gates for the very first time and let that first mob in. It was almost as far as you could see, just nothing but people's heads and shoulders ahead of you. It was just incredible, the amount of people, the number of people that were waiting to get into the place. And Disney was smart. They have things set up. By the way, if you'd like to hop on a plane and go see it tomorrow, you can't. Not without a reservation. You actually have to go online to Disney's website and you have to make a reservation. I think, I may be wrong about this, but I think you actually have to be staying in one of their hotels, have a reservation, and then you get on the list, you get a wristband, and you're allowed in for 4 hours. And that's it. You get to stay for 4 hours. From what I understand, 4 hours is enough time. That's enough time. You can see everything because there's only two rides. It's just that the place looks like you've walked into a Star Wars movie. It's just impressive. It's very impressive. Most impressive, as Darth Vader would say. But I sat and spent way too much time watching those videos. And I remember commenting to my wife last night, or yesterday. We were out yesterday, had to run some errands. And I told her, now that I've watched these videos, I kind of almost feel like I've been there. And we agreed that we would probably not even try to go see these places for the next couple of years. And the reason for that is that they will continue to be crowded, constantly crowded. Now, the one in Orlando opens, I believe it's in September, and that's the one we would end up going to see, but we're not going in September. We're not going right after it opens. You see, it was almost 2 years ago, in September of 2017, that was our last trip to Orlando, and we decided we wanted to go see the Land of Pandora. It had been open for a while. We thought, by now, you know, we should have no trouble getting in to see these things that everybody's talking about. Oh, not so much. The line for the Flight of Passage or something like that. It's the big ride. It's the big motion ride, that the motion simulator ride, where it's like you're riding on one of these one of the Banshees. That's what they call them. And the line for that was over 2 hours. It was like 2.5 hours to stand in line with a bunch of people in the heat waiting to get on a ride that's going to last, 3 minutes at the tops? And the line for the river ride that's in that same land, it was over an hour long. We just kind of looked around. We did the Clark Griswold at the Grand Canyon. Great, let's go. And we turned around and went somewhere else. And it was all over. So we've decided that after the Star Wars land opens in Florida, we'll go back to Walt Disney World and we'll go to Pandora and we'll see all the stuff we didn't get a chance to see while we were there last time. But that was kind of our weekend. It was uneventful. Yard work, housework, things like that, and geeking out about the new Star Wars stuff happening at Walt Disney World. Oh, my gosh. What have we got to talk about today? A lot of stuff is going on today. There was a big shooting Friday in Virginia, and there's been a lot of talk about this shooting. And, of course, politicians have jumped on board, and they're talking about laws, and we'll talk about that. We're still talking about Robert Mueller doing this appearance, and I've got something from Judge Jean Pirro. It's a little too long. I want to play her audio for you. It's 6.5 minutes long, and I won't have time to get into it before the break, but right after the break, we'll hit that. What else is there? Donald Trump. Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, is not happy that Donald Trump is on an official state visit to London. And I saw some of the video this morning, which was afternoon in England. But his official reception there with the band and with the honor guard and the queen is there and the whole nine yards is very impressive. It was very impressive. But there are a lot of clueless liberal leftist progressive people that live in Europe, and a lot of them live in England, and they just, you know, they just believe whatever their news media tells them, and they don't bother to dig for the truth, and they just assume that what they're being told is right when it isn't. So Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, we've talked about London Stan before here. People nowadays are saying it's not a British city anymore. It's just not. And he has a terrible crime problem. They have outlawed guns there. Guns are something we'll be talking about today. They've outlawed guns there. So now they have knife problems. And so they have knife control. They have knife control because laws against, you know, they outlawed guns. And what happened next? The people who would commit violence with a weapon chose the next thing they could get their hands on, which is how this works. They never seem to learn. But Sadiq Khan is not happy that Donald Trump is there. He's had some nasty things to say. And Donald Trump on Twitter this morning said, Sadiq Khan, who by all accounts has done a terrible job as mayor of London, has been foolishly nasty to the visiting president of the United States, by far the most important ally of the United Kingdom. He is a stone-cold loser who should focus on crime in London, not me. Khan reminds me very much of our very dumb and incompetent mayor of New York City, de Blasio, who has also done a terrible job, only half his height. In any event, I look forward to being a great friend to the United Kingdom and am looking very much forward to my visit landing now. So he compares him to that idiot Bill de Blasio in New York City and then takes a shot at his height. Thanks, half his height. Now, this is the kind of stuff that I think is brilliant on the part of Donald Trump, because he will tweet something like this and the news media will get preoccupied with it and they'll clutch their pearls and gasp about how unpresidential it is to make comments like this. While he goes about his merry way, doing his job, making life better for Americans. And the thing is, the beauty part of that is that people who are honest about life and honest about their lives and honest about everything around them can see what he's doing. They can see that what he's doing is that he's playing the media like a cheap fiddle. He's just playing them. He does things like this to get them distracted. And then they get distracted, and then they get all righteous and huffy about things, and people watch them and think, why are they so upset about this? Don't we have real problems they should be talking about? And the media reveals itself for being the shallow, bitter, angry pack of children they actually are. I think it's a beautiful thing, and he's been doing it since the beginning. I remember when he first started tweeting and people were talking about, oh, this is bad. Somebody's going to have to get his iPhone away from him. They're going to have to get that phone away from him and keep him off Twitter. He's going to be out of control. This is going to be bad. It doesn't look presidential, and so on and so on and so on. And I remember Dave and I were talking about it on the Mark and Max show, and he was saying, I think this Twitter stuff is bad. It looks bad. And I told him, you know what? I think Twitter's the only way he's going to be able to tell people what's really going on, among other things. I think he's using Twitter to play the media, like the cheap instrument they are, and I think he's also going to use it to make public statements that will never get filtered through the media. Well, they'll be heavily filtered by the news media so that the people won't know what's really happening. This is the only way he's going to be able to communicate with the people, because the press sure isn't going to be honest about what he's doing and what he's saying. And it seems I was right about that, because that's exactly what he's been doing. He's been using Twitter to jab at the news media, the progressive press, and to keep America informed, to let people know what's really happening. Now, does he always tell the truth on Twitter? Oh, heck no, he doesn't. And I think that's by design as well. I think he postures. I think he brags. I think he does things just because he knows that's the way to get things done, and because it's going to rattle the cages and shake the trees, and what falls out is going to be really, really revealing. So good for him. Only half his height. Oh, Sadiq Khan has made such a mess out of London. And being part of the EU has made a mess out of England. And they're trying so hard to pull out, to get out of that disastrous arrangement. And hopefully they will get out. Because they've lost their uniqueness by trying to be part of this big socialist combine of the EU. More after the break, when the Daily Perspective continues.
I got things to do here.
Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Hi there. Hey, thanks a lot for joining in every day. I appreciate it. Whether you are on the Facebook live feed or whether you're on the podcast, I appreciate the fact that you're there. Excuse me. This is a byproduct of me being out over the weekend. I'm outside and my allergies are seeking revenge. At any rate, thank you so much for being there. I appreciate you being there every day. It means a lot to me, the fact that you are downloading the podcast every day and keeping up with what's happening here, and the fact that you guys who are on Facebook Live every day, I appreciate you guys being there. And I appreciate all of you sharing with your friends. And keep doing that. Spread the word. Let people know. Wow, that was quick. What happened there? Where did that go? All of a sudden, boink, it's over. Ooh, I need to put a fade on that one. It is a Monday edition of the Daily Perspective, the first full week in June 2019. And I mentioned earlier that there was something that Fox News host Gene Pirro had to say, and I believe this was from Friday, and her opening statement on Friday was pretty much to the point. She was talking about Robert Mueller, who held a news conference to announce that he was quitting his job, he was retiring, and also to, if we're going to be honest about it, also to take a shot at President Trump and to essentially tell the Democrats in the House the only way they were going to get what they want was to file impeachment, was to start impeachment proceedings. And of course, what happened after that, and you saw what happened to that after that, and that was that everybody who's been screaming the I word went insane. They just went nuts. We have to impeach. We have to impeach. We have to impeach. They just went crazy. And so we had to deal with that for a couple of days. And Judge Jeanine had an interesting perspective on this. And she tends to just lay everything out there, and she doesn't care whose toes she steps on. And this is how that went.
The reason that Robert Mueller spoke publicly this week is because he was more worried about his legacy than he was in protecting this country. This is counter to everything he was taught and supposedly stood for, and is not only disappointing, but politically damaging. Mueller was charged with serving the United States of America and not his ego. Yet that is exactly how he will now be remembered. Mueller had a case of seller's remorse when the seller regrets what he's already sold. It seems Bob is afflicted with a serious case of this remorse. The original report didn't hurt Trump enough. Ask yourselves one question. Why, after 10 weeks after the special counsel report is submitted, does Mueller unilaterally decide to hold a press conference to say he's closing shop? And why does Mueller do a Jim Comey and say, I didn't charge, but only because dot, 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 dot? Why? He does it to rally the left because the Mueller report didn't hurt enough. Mind you, the report is the best evidence of the investigation. It is the investigation. There's no need to unilaterally emphasize or add to the document. Not Robert Mueller. He decides to jump into the political fray just like his pal Jim Comey did. And now the calls for impeachment are echoing throughout Congress. This was not the case when the report was submitted. So Mueller, I imagine, at the behest of the left, gives them what they need to jumpstart the calls for impeachment. But nothing has changed in the report. The only thing that has changed is Mueller deciding to create chaos and havoc, as if 2 years of an investigation of the president showing absolutely no Trump-Russia collusion and no obstruction are not enough. But that's exactly what Mueller did. Muddy up the waters and charge up the left.
After that investigation, if we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so.
Now they never said that in the report. So now Mueller is adding, look, I'm not confident you didn't commit a crime. Folks, that is sheer lunacy. I don't know a prosecutor in this country who has ever said after a grand jury investigation, I'm not sure he didn't commit a crime. You either indict or you don't. You don't come out and say, you know, that Vinnie Bumbatz, I'm not indicting him, but man, I'm telling you, he ain't a good guy. Every prosecutor knows if you don't indict someone, you stop there. So what was the point of the 400-plus report? The report doesn't say, I'm not confident you didn't commit a crime. So then what's the end game now? Let's take a second to talk about collusion. Not the Trump-Russia collusion. But what about collusion between Mueller and the Democrats? The Democrats don't have an independent thought other than their hatred of Donald Trump. The Mueller report didn't accomplish their goal. The Democrats are desperate. They need Mueller to shake things up so they can rally the troops around impeachment. Think about it. What do the Democrats offer other than all things anti-Trump?
We did not, however, make a determination as to whether the president did commit a crime.
And why the heck not? What did you and your gang of Trump-hating, Hillary-loving lawyers do for 2 years? He uses as an excuse that he couldn't indict because the Office of Legal Counsel guidelines says you cannot indict a sitting president. Yet even unflappable Attorney General Bill Barr took offense to that one.
Special counsel stated three times to us in that meeting in response to our questioning that he emphatically was not saying that but for the OLC opinion, he would have found obstruction. We did not understand exactly why the special counsel was not reaching a decision. And when we pressed him on it, he said that his team was still formulating the explanation.
Still formulating an explanation as to why you didn't reach a decision on obstruction? Are you stupid? You had 2 years to think about that one. And he did not. Instead, he punted. And now Mueller wants to come out and say, look, we never said he didn't. We simply couldn't make a decision because he's a sitting president. Folks, that's baloney. What was the point of this investigation in the first place? What did you do for 2 years, Bob? You could have reached a conclusion without charging by simply stating your conclusion or your opinion. And by the way, when did you know there was no collusion? Did you know that before the midterms? You could have shut the whole thing down. Again, it was a major help to the Democrats now, wasn't it? And you're helping them yet again. So let's recap. Neither the president nor anyone on the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. You couldn't make a decision on obstruction, and by law, the attorney general and deputy attorney general had to do so. So who the hell asked you this week to come out and muddy the waters like Jim Comey did in 2016? I guess we now have a competition between holier-than-thou Jim Comey and mixed-up Monsignor Mueller, both members of the choir of never-Trumpers in the Church of the Demon Rats, because that's what this is all about. Nothing more and nothing less.
Wow. pulling no punches, Judge Jeanine Pirro on Fox News the other night. And I don't disagree with her. I think this was all set up. It was all arranged. It was all it. And I think the reason, okay, let me back up. It was a setup. It was orchestrated to help the Democrats make a case against Donald Trump for the purpose of undermining his credibility in order to either remove him from office or prevent him from winning a second term. And we can see now that what they're doing is focusing on denying him that second term. They're doing everything they can to undermine his credibility. In the meantime, his approval numbers are rising. They keep going up, little by little by little, as people are experiencing positive changes in America, which are contrasting what they're being told by the mainstream press. Another thing is she asked the question is, when did he know? When did Robert Mueller know there was no collusion? When did he know that that Donald Trump and his campaign weren't in bed with the Russians in the Russian efforts to play games with our election? When did he know? She's not the first person to ask this question. I've heard a couple of others ask. How long did it take you to find this out? And when you found out, why didn't you stand up and say, one of the main things we're looking for, we've found, and we really don't need to go any further? Because he didn't, it's fairly obvious that the entire time he was working, the entire time this investigation was going on, it was purely for the purpose of undermining the credibility of the president and damaging the office of the presidency in order to prevent him from having any traction in 2020. And hopefully giving them something they could find to remove him from office now. Dirty, dirty politics on the part of the Democrats.
Okay, now go. 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 Go.
I think we're ready to go.
Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Oh, man. First half hour of the Monday show is already in the can. Let's move forward and deal with the shooting that happened in Virginia. I've got a stack of little stories here about this, and hopefully some clarification as well. I watched this unfold over the weekend because, as usual, when there is a shooting, the news media is going to jump all over it. The progressive press will jump all over it because it is sensational and it fits the paradigm. If it bleeds, it leads. So they jump on it and that's what they talk about. And what you get is a lot of speculation. They pull in their experts and they have panels and they talk about things and they bemoan the fact that this happens in America. And then they start talking about how we're the only country in the world where this kind of thing happens and other lies. By the way, that's not true. It's just not true. There have been horrible things happening, mass murders with guns in other places. And when you look at the stats, you look at the real statistics, you find that we're actually way down on the list. That there are other places in the world. Honduras, for example, is Honduras tops the list. Go look. Well, the politicians and pundits have been posturing. That's the three P's, politicians, pundits, posturing. That's all of them right there. And one of those politicians is Senator Cory Booker. He, along with a lot of other Democrat candidates for the presidency, all of those people in the clown car, they took some time to speak at the California Democratic Party convention over the weekend. And they all talked about gun control, to rousing applause, and Cory Booker was one of them. After the massacre in Virginia Beach last week, Senator Cory Booker completely overhauled his speech for the California Democratic Party convention on Saturday, using the day-old tragedy to push his plan for comprehensive gun control. By Sunday, Booker deflected questions from CNN host Jake Tapper, who hammered the Democratic presidential hopeful over the plan's nuances and questioned how it would have prevented Friday's tragedy. Appearing on CNN's State of the Union, Booker dodged numerous questions over how gun control, which typically advocates for restrictions on semi-automatic rifles like the AR-15, would have prevented Friday's tragedy given it was carried out with two legally purchased handguns. The question was asked, how would your plan have stopped this tragedy, if at all? Booker, however, just ignored the question and focused on generalizing gun violence in America. Quote, well, Jake, again, this is a tragedy today, but you know what, that every single day in the United States of America, in the aggregate, we have mass shootings that go on in neighborhoods like mine. We're not helpless to stop this. This is a uniquely American problem. We have carnage in our country at levels that no other nation sees, more people dying in my lifetime due to gun violence than all the Americans that died due to gun violence in every single war from the Revolutionary War until now. By the way, everything he just said there is a lie. Moving forward, as Booker continued to advocate for his vision of gun control in America, Tapper didn't relent. He said, I'm sorry to interrupt, but what would have prevented this tragedy? What steps specifically would have stopped the massacre in Virginia Beach? Booker, the senator from New Jersey, never answered Tapper's question. Instead, he just talked about his gun control plan. And finally, Tapper had enough. He said, I hear you not talking about this specific massacre, but talking about gun violence in general. He said, he shifted the interview then to different gun control questions. And this is typical of people on the left. They lie about gun issues, and then they make proposals to solve problems which actually don't exist. Now, Jerry Nadler, Democrat from New York, you remember Jerry, he's the guy heading up the House of Representatives' effort to destroy the president, who recently had a spell in front of a bunch of people. They say he was dehydrated. I don't think we'll ever hear the truth about that. It looked to me like he might have had a stroke, but hey. He tweeted after this tragedy in Virginia. He said, we're nearly 100 days since House Judiciary passed H.R. 8, the Universal Background Checks Bill, in the House. And today there's been another mass shooting in America. Thoughts and prayers are not enough. We need action now. That's a favorite line of theirs. Thoughts and prayers are not enough. Thoughts and prayers are not enough. Well, you know what? He's right about that. Thoughts and prayers aren't enough, but thoughts and prayers are vital. They have to happen. The reason that thoughts and prayers aren't enough is because politicians like Jerry Nadler are ignoring the reality, and they're blaming the guns. It's not a gun problem, it's a people problem. During a press conference on Saturday, ATF Special Agent in Charge Ashan Benedict stated that guns appear to have been purchased legally, the guns used in the shooting. Working with Virginia Police Department, State Police, and our partners with the FBI, we identified two weapons used in the shooting yesterday. Both weapons are .45 caliber pistols. One was purchased in 2016. The other was purchased in 2018. Both pistols were purchased by the shooter, and all indications are they were purchased legally. In addition, ATF agents assisted local police with the search warrant at the shooter's residence. Two other firearms were recovered from that location. One of the two has been identified, and the one that has been identified, it also was legally purchased by the shooter. So the weapons he used were purchased legally, abiding by every law that Democrats and the like have put into place to prevent this kind of thing from happening. Given the information that's been provided to the public, namely that the shooter appears to have purchased both of his firearms legally, it's impossible to know whether or not the Universal Background Checks Bill, H.R. 8, referred to earlier, mentioned by Representative Nadler, would have done anything to prevent the Virginia Beach shooting. Here's the thing. No, it wouldn't have. By the way, the H.R. 8 bill, let's break it down for a second in case you're unaware of what it actually is. It reads in part, in Section A, it shall be unlawful for any person who is not a licensed importer, licensed manufacturer, or licensed dealer to transfer a firearm to any other person who is not so licensed, unless a licensed importer, licensed manufacturer, or licensed dealer has first taken possession of the firearm for the purpose of complying with subsection S. And B, upon taking possession of a firearm under subparagraph A, a licensee shall comply with all requirements of this chapter as if the licensee were transferring the firearm from the inventory of the licensee to the unlicensed transferee. The purpose of the legislation, as described by the bill summary, is to prohibit a firearm transfer between private parties unless a licensed gun dealer, manufacturer, or importer first takes possession of the firearm to conduct a background check. In other words, if you want to give your child a gun from your collection, you have to take that gun under this bill. You have to take it to a locally licensed, federally licensed gun dealer, put it into the gun dealer's hands, and the gun dealer must perform a background check on the person to whom you are presenting this gun. You can't just give a firearm as a gift or give a firearm to anyone or sell one to your neighbor across the fence because he really likes that shotgun of yours and he'd like to buy it from you. You can't do that anymore, according to the Democrats, it wouldn't have happened. The Senate Republicans would not allow this to happen because there's a lot more in this bill that's just wrong. Besides, the problem, the big problem, the gun violence issue that we see in America isn't happening with private sales from individuals, decent people. It's criminals. Well, as of publication, let's see, hang on, let me back up. According to a survey in 2015 conducted by Matthew Miller, Lisa Hepburn, and Deborah Azrael, they all have lots of letters after their names. Quote, among gun owners who acquired their most recent firearm within the past 2 years by way of purchase, 13% did so without a background check. Now, that's 13%. That's according to a study. The study, of course, is not going to include people on the streets of Chicago who get their weapons from other criminals who don't get them legally in the first place. So they're all dealing in the realm of people who are legally doing things, honest, upright Americans who are doing things properly. None of this deals with the real issue. They just say there need to be more laws. Well, wasn't there already a law in place that made killing someone else illegal? That didn't seem to matter to the guy in Virginia, did it? We don't know much about this guy. We do know he was a black male. We know he bought his guns legally. We know he was a disgruntled employee. He wasn't happy with something in his workplace. We know these things. But we don't know much else. I would almost be willing to bet he was a Democrat, a liberal, because that kind of holds to the pattern. And we can pretty much bet that he had some sort of mental health issues of some kind. That also fits the pattern. But we don't know yet. At this point, all we can do is speculate. And that is what the mainstream progressive press does very well. They speculate and fan the flames of fear.
Yes, it came from outer space to fill the world with terror.
What was that? Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Oh, my goodness gracious. Let's get back into guns again real quick. On Facebook this morning, I ran across a short article by Kevin Ryan at Unbiased America. And I think it's important in the context of what we were just talking about. And I like it because he's using a source that he's using Mother Jones's own data to disprove what a lot of people in Mother Jones's camp on the left are claiming. Here we go. After last week's mass shooting in Virginia left 12 people dead, a lot of people commented that it was so unusual that it was a black person who did the shooting and that he used a handgun and not a rifle. So I did some digging to find out whether the public's perception of mass shootings is correct. Turns out it's largely not. The narrative that white males are disproportionately responsible is only half true. Males are indeed responsible for almost all mass shootings. There were a total of 111 mass shootings in which at least four people, not including the shooter, were killed since 1982, an average of 2.9 per year. Only four of these involved a female shooter. Can we stop for a moment here? You've heard numbers spewed by people on the left that are a lot higher than this. But the qualification for a mass shooting is four people, not including the shooter, at least four people, not including the shooter. And there have only been 111 of them since 1982. That is, 35 years? 111. The people on the left, the politicians and the like, would tell you that about twice that many have happened in the last year. However, that narrative that white people are disproportionately responsible is wrong. Whites make up 64% of the population, but just 58% of mass shooters. Hispanics also commit fewer mass shootings than their percent of the population. Blacks, Asians, and Native Americans, meanwhile, all commit a disproportionately greater percent of mass shootings than their percent of the population. Another false narrative I discovered, excuse me, is the idea that rifles, especially so-called assault rifles, are responsible for most mass shootings. In reality, handguns, hold on a second, lost my place. In reality, handguns are the primary weapon used in more than half of mass shootings. And the notion that most mass shootings occur in schools is also false. Just 15% of those do. Just 15% in schools. However, there is one very big constant in a large majority of mass shootings. Fully 77% of the shooters had a history of mental health issues. Indeed, if people are truly interested in addressing the issue of mass violence, addressing the topic of mental health would be a good place to start. So they include in this, and you'll see it in the show notes today. If you get the newsletter, you'll see the show notes. There's a little graphic. 1982 to 2019, this is incidents with more than four people killed. The primary weapon used, 53% of them, handguns. Legally obtained, 82% of them. Prior mental health issues, 77%. Yes, they had prior mental health issues. 53% handguns, 33% rifles, 14% were shotguns. 82% legally obtained, 77% had prior mental issues. So, they're talking about controlling guns, when in reality, what needs to be addressed is mental health issues. And also, there needs to be follow-through on the laws. Politicians love to pass new laws. They love to address an issue by passing a law. We'll fix the problem by passing a law. But as I said before, there's already a law against murder. That sort of washes the rest of them out, doesn't it? If somebody's going to commit murder, whether it be on a small or a large scale, they're already breaking the law. Law doesn't stop behavior when people are intent on committing that behavior. Law is meaningless to people who don't care. And these people, for whatever reasons, don't care. Now, as long as we're speaking anti-gun stuff, we can't ignore what happened. What happened outside of our country when our former president, Barack Hussein Obama, took the level of stupid to a new height in Brazil, where he said you could buy machine guns over the internet. This is a man who swore to uphold our laws for 8 years. He doesn't even know the basics of the National Firearms Act. He told an audience in Brazil that our gun laws in the United States don't make much sense and claimed machine guns could be bought legally online. Quote, "You know, without much, if any, regulation, they can buy it over the internet. They can buy machine guns. And for me, having to speak to parents who've lost a child just 2 days or a day after it happened and not being able to assure them that that would change, that we would fix this, I couldn't bring their children back, but I couldn't even promise them that we would change the law so this didn't happen to somebody else's children," he said. There are about 300 federal and state gun laws that regulate the sale and acquisition of firearms in the United States. When it comes to internet gun sales, the firearm is sent to a gun dealer who holds a federal firearms license. An FBI background check is then conducted before the firearm is transferred to the buyer. So basically everything he said, big surprise, is a lie. Machine guns, by the way, you can't buy a machine gun in the United States of America. You can't. Not for a long, long time. Those that had been owned were owned at the time of that law being passed or grandfathered in, but not since then. He's lying. And this is not ancient news. This is current. This is current. He's talking to people in Brazil. Just the other day, in fact. Fully automatic firearms that were registered under the National Firearms Act before 1986 were grandfathered in and still legal. The sale of new fully automatic firearms was effectively banned in 1986 under the Hughes Agreement. Everything he said was false. Everything. But the thing is, if I can look back at what he said, I couldn't bring their children back, but I couldn't even promise that we could change the law so this wouldn't happen or didn't happen to anybody else's children. The laws haven't changed anything. As I said earlier, if someone is intent on doing something, the law is meaningless to them. If somebody wants to buy drugs illegally on the streets, it's against the law. They're still going to do it. If someone wants to rob a convenience store, you can post a big sign on the front door, one that they have to read when they're walking in, that says, "Oh, by the way, robbing this convenience store is against the law." Are they going to go back to their car and shake their heads and say, "Doggone it, now I can't rob that convenience store because it's against the law"? No. They're not going to stop what they were going to do. They knew it was against the law going in, and that didn't matter to them. Laws don't stop people from hurting other people. As I said earlier, murder is already against the law. The law states you can't murder somebody else, and yet it happens every day. More laws are not the answer. The answer is strictly and harshly enforcing the laws already on the books and dealing with mental health issues. As we discussed in the previous story, 77% of the 111 mass killings since 1982 involved prior mental health issues. 77% of them. And if we address mental health issues and combine that with doubling, tripling, or quadrupling the sentencing if a gun's involved, we might make a dent in things if we could keep the liberals from muddying the waters and fighting for the criminals who are murdering our friends, neighbors, and children. But until we can accomplish these things, we're not going to make a lot of headway. But the solution is not more laws that are going to be ignored. Hey, that's it for me today. God bless you. Have a great Monday. We'll see you tomorrow for the Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.